FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's August 30th, 2017. Well, momentous things happening in the world now, looking at political unrest, weather events such as Hurricane Harvey, and a general feeling of unsettledness, of unease, kind of spreading across the globe. Well, Dr. Benjamin Weicker is with us, and you're basically a person who's got an MA in religion and a PhD in theological ethics and a teacher as well. And new book that you've got out, which I find really interesting, is The Reformation 500 Years Later, 12 Things You Need to Know. And before we get started, any questions, comments, email me at kl@kerrylutz.com. So Dr. Weicker, first, welcome to the show.
And thanks for having me.
So you wrote this book, and if I'm to understand correctly, you're seeing parallels between the Reformation and now. The Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, you might not be familiar with it out there, but it was a momentous time. I guess we need to really paint the picture. What was the Reformation like?
Yes, and I do that in the book. I mean, this is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. That is this year, 2017. The Reformation officially began in 1517. That was with Martin Luther allegedly nailing his 95 theses to the door of Wittenberg Castle Church, which is really an attempt to reform the papacy. So that's how it began. He was an Augustinian monk. And for those unaware of the subsequent history, that's when there was the biggest division between the Catholics and the Protestants, and the Protestants were themselves divided after that. So from that time period comes all the different Christian denominations that we experience today that are around now. Now, the focus of the book, as the title suggests, is what about now? What connection does that have now? And as I make the argument in the book, the time that we have now, 500 years later, Catholics and Protestants are finally coming together again, and they're coming together again because they have common enemies who are out to exterminate all Christians. On the one side, radical secularism; on the other side, radical Islam.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of allies of necessity here.
Yes, and for those who have watched The Lord of the Rings or read J.R.R. Tolkien's wonderful book, you know, you have the elves and the dwarves in the castle being attacked by the orcs, and the elves and the dwarves have been fighting for centuries, but now they get together because they realize that they better hang together or they're going to hang separately. So that's pretty much the situation of Catholics and Protestants now, and there's a lot of unity that has arisen out of fighting a common front against common enemies.
Well, now when we look at the Catholic Church, the Pope seems to have open arms for all the refugees of the world, regardless whether they want to do Westerners and Catholics and Protestants in particular harm or not. Is a little bit of inconsistency there?
Well, this is an interesting time because you've got massive migrations, and you know, on the Catholic side, a Pope is saying, "Well, you know, I'm open my arms to all Christians and non-Christians alike." And there are many Muslims who are escaping a persecution by other Muslims. Mm-hmm. The more radical Muslims, and certainly, you know, they could be taken in as refugees, but it's not, it seems to me, as simple as that, because you can't really tell the difference a lot. And when you get a critical mass of Muslims in a territory, they tend to revert to full Sharia law like situation. So the interesting thing is that situation in Europe today, where Europe is being directly threatened by Islam, was there 500 years ago in the Reformation. In fact, Muslims today who know their history would consider a serious parallel, because in 1500, everyone thought that the Muslims were about to completely invade Europe and take over, and that would be the end of Christendom. And many Christians are feeling that way now about Europe 500 years later.
Okay. And what about the Crusades and their involvement in all of this?
of the things that I do in the Reformation 500 years later is focus on the history of Islam, because there's so much confusion about it. One of the things that people don't know is how important Islam was in the Reformation, what effect it had. In fact, it was the fear of Islam that kept the emperor at the time from taking care of the situation with Luther, because they were actually invading, the Muslims were invading in Eastern Europe. But one of the things that I provide is a long history, it's a short history of Islam, so that people understand what it's been doing since the 600s. And what it's been doing is trying to conquer Europe. And so the Crusades were a little blip in that. A small loss for Islam, which was soon rectified, and that was the end of the Crusades. So they were really a failed attempt by West, Christian West, to take back Jerusalem,
right,
which Islam conquered all the way back in 637. People don't know that either.
Mm-hmm.
So Christians felt themselves on the run at a conquering Islam, because that's what was happening. The Crusades fit into that.
And now, Doctor, what we see is that they're trying to purge out all signs, all history of Christendom in the Holy Land, in the Middle East. You see it with the Coptic Christians. You see it with Christians being chased out of Syria and lots of other places.
Yes, and these aren't small numbers. The recent reports, and I quote some of this in the book. We're talking like 100,000 Christians martyred a year over the last couple of decades in radical Islam.
Right.
It's a serious martyrdom that hasn't let up and is only going to get worse. Yet, who is paying attention to that? Who hears anything on that in the news?
Yeah, well, when President Trump basically made a speech that we're in an existential battle here for salvaging the civilization of the West, a lot of the media really poo-pooed this and didn't take it seriously.
And a lot of that is because they are almost willfully ignorant of history. In other words, if you just look at the situation now, you say, well, you know, what's wrong with Islam? This is an aberration, but generally they're going to be like Methodists or Unitarians. You know, they're not going to be any different. But when you look at the actual history of Islam as conquering these areas since the year 600, you realize this is simply for them an extension of what they've been doing and what they've been trying to achieve, like the attack in Barcelona. They believe that they're taking back the Spain that they had originally conquered in the 700s and that Allah had given to them. And so it really belongs to them. So that's how they view it, taking back what God had given to them.
Right. It's like they're repossessing it.
Yes, exactly. And in 1500, when Martin Luther's around, they pretty much thought that they were about to take over the West, and the West pretty much thought it was about to be taken over. Luther thought he was in the last days and that God was using Islam as a rod of wrath because Christians refused to reform. But nearly everyone thought that this was it for Christendom. This was the last Christian century in the 1500s, and it was by some miracle that in fact the Muslim advance was turned back. But they had already made their way into Europe, down in Italy, southeastern Europe. They had conquered Constantinople, and we thought that was curtains for Christendom. And now here, 500 years later, it's not by invasion; it's simply by a demographic inflow that's supplanting the native population.
And so I guess if you don't want to recognize the situation, very hard to come up with solutions here. Is there a solution?
Well, one of the things that makes it difficult, and again, I go into this in the book, is that secularism has for 600 years been removing Christianity from culture. And this actually begins before the Reformation, and I detail that. And what happens is Europe gets hollowed out. You get a kind of a vacuum of faith, and into that vacuum rushes Islam, because Europe is weirdly anti-Christian, but oddly enough, sort of pro-Islam, looking at Islam as a benign and wonderful thing, and Christianity is the worst thing you got to get rid of. Well, that actually grew out of the Enlightenment. in the 1700s. It has roots earlier in that than that. Mm-hmm. But it grew out of the radical Enlightenment kind of secularist viewpoint that Christianity was the worst thing in the world and Islam was better. So there was a kind of love affair with Islam on the left, reaching all the way back to the 1700s. And that still informs Europe's way of looking at Islam and Christianity.
Right. And so is Trump that far off the reservation here, or is he onto something?
Well, you know, the people that think that he's a loony bin on those comments ought to go visit the areas like the no-go zones in Paris and see what it means to have an entirely different culture. It's not Christian. It's not secular. It's Islam based in Sharia law. And it ain't the same. And I don't think that they would be welcome there or they would last very long there. And they would soon have to admit, well, it really is going to make a difference. You're talking about an entirely different culture based on entirely different assumptions.
Right. So what about what's going on in the U.S. here? Are the Muslims coming here, are they assimilating or are they just trying to start their own little no-go zones and pockets of Sharia law?
There are areas like that, but you know the thing about the United States is it's so big that it's hard to have a coalescing of you might call it a tipping point population of Muslims in any area. I think Dearborn, Michigan, we have it there. But you know these European states are tiny by comparison, and of course they're the ones getting the greatest inflow of Muslim immigration. So you have a de-Christianized Europe really not able to have a framework to even understand what's happening to it. But America, you still have a fairly Christianized nation, but it's also geographically spread out. It's hard to get a sort of a demographic, concentration of Muslims in any one area, but it will happen. That is, it will happen. We know because if you just want to know what's going to happen in the United States, look at Europe and add 50 years or 25 years.
Mm. So the concept of limiting immigration to the U.S., not such a bad idea then.
Well, even independently of whatever anyone's beliefs are coming in, you have to limit immigration insofar as you have a certain amount of resources that can deal with a new population. I mean, that should be kind of an obvious thing from how you're going to provide water, food, clothing, shelter, all those things. That should be just normal discourse. But Europe has already tried pretending there's no difference in what you believe.
Right.
And what they're up against is a more and more the Islamization of various aspects of it, like the, I don't know whether you read about it, the young girl, like 5 years old, I think, in London, a Christian girl, put in foster care. They take off her cross, you know, tell her that Christianity is stupid, that Easter is stupid, and Christmas is stupid, and tries to teach her Arabic. Well, there you have the state making a decision that of the first importance way a child will be raised, making it on behalf of Islam. We've got a London Islamic mayor. I mean, what is going to happen is you're going to have the state slowly switch the legal allowance, but the legal affirmation and then the precedence, because already in some areas, Sharia law has taken the place of civil law.
Yeah, well, that sounds very disheartening.
I don't mean to depress you that much.
But is Western civilization going to wake up to this, or is it just going to roll over and allow it to happen?
That's a good question. I secularism has been around for 500 years, and this battle between, you know, secular atheists and Christianity is an old battle, and it looks like secularism has won in a lot of places, but it's now showing its weakness, that is, society is crumbling, and Islam sees it as a crumbling post-Christian society ripe for the takeover. Christians now, I argue, in the Reformation 500 years later, now have to say, we need to come together. We need to realize that there's more that we have in common that separates us. And we need once again to be Christianizing a degraded culture so that it can withstand these kinds of things, so that it does have a way to define itself morally so that it can gain strength again.
Right. And when you finally come to the conclusion that you're under threat, then it might happen. But until they get to that point, they're just going to continue on this suicidal path, aren't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, at what point can you convince somebody who is being bombed and is having cars and vans running into crowds, that the people who do it really mean what they say. We are trying to destroy you. And then you go back and you read, what is the Quran about? What is this history? And it all accords with that. At what point do you have to say something that you don't want to say? Hey, maybe there's a difference in religions, and maybe Christianity, even if I don't believe in it, has got to be better than the people who are trying to run me over with a truck.
Yeah. I think they finally found a way to attack. It definitely gets the publicity. Look at a place like Sweden. It's madness what's going on there, isn't it? They won't admit they're in a state of complete denial that this takeover is taking place. Complete denial.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, all I can say is you asked for it and you're going to get it. There's no deep understanding of history, and what they thought they had was sort of like a liberal secular paradise, and nothing could ever go wrong. And all they had to add was people who radically disagree with them. And then suddenly they find out, wow, something's not working here.
Yeah, you would think they would have come to that conclusion already, Dr. Weicker. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, you see, like, these attacks are regular ongoing things, and yet somebody like Merkel says, oh, it's an exception. It's self-loathing on the part of the West, pretty much blaming the West for their really ungodly behavior, if you will.
Well, this is it shows itself in sort of in the way they think of their crusades, which are actually backwards. It was a minor horsefly in the rump of Islam at the time.
Well,
it really didn't matter to them.
And
I document that in the book. So they're not like getting us back from the Crusades. They didn't even probably wouldn't remember it if we hadn't reminded them.
The Crusades.
As you say, it's sort of like a self-loathing. We must have done everything bad, and everybody else must be good.
Yeah. So, well, the one thing that the Crusades did was stop for several hundred years, the out-and-out militaristic attack of Islam on Europe. I mean, they were driven out of Spain, the Moors, and the Caliphate was driven out of Europe pretty much. But whereas Europe would like to think, hey, that's it, it's over, as far as Islam's concerned, it never really ended.
No, it didn't. And when the West dismantled the caliphate, which was the Ottoman caliphate in Turkey in the first quarter of the 20th century, that was the worst slap it could have ever given to Islam, because that was the Ottoman Empire. That was the one that was about to invade in Luther's time in 1500.
Right.
And they're looking for revenge. They're not looking to become more like a secularized Turkey. And the greatest sign of that is you look at Turkey and it's gone the other way.
Yeah, totally a miscalculation by the West, not understanding that Turkey, a secularized Turkey, was the buffer, keeping a lid on things, keeping Islam from attempting to take over Europe again. They totally miscalculated that situation. Well, it's really interesting times here. I will count on Islam to screw up and to be unsuccessful, because it is a failed culture in so many regards. You know, technologically, value-wise, they're still living in 600 AD. Not to put down people who are faithful practitioners, but like you said, the Quran has a lot of dastardly, really antithetical portions in it towards human rights, towards the rights of children, towards the rights of women, towards the rights of anyone who doesn't embrace Islam. I mean, you can't not know that. This is just fact.
Yeah, unfortunately, you cannot know it. I mean, people can be willfully ignorant, and you wouldn't think, well, just read the book. I mean, that's a start.
It's all there.
Basic history.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
I recommend that people read the Quran for that reason.
Yeah, it's shocking what's in it. It's shocking that people in so-called modern enlightened times can actually believe these things and practice them. And look, I'm all against shoplifters, but maybe cutting off their right hand is a little extreme for stealing a a USB drive or a thumb drive or something like that. That might be a little too extreme to punish a young male adult for shoplifting by cutting off his hand.
Yeah, and these are what people probably don't realize is these kinds of punishments are not only taken from the Quran, but what's called the hadiths.
Yes.
Which are the accounts of the life of Muhammad, which tell all the details of these things and a lot of the gory details. And when a radical Muslim, that is a Muslim who goes back to the root of things, realizes, well, that's what Muhammad did, and Muhammad represents the absolute peak of what a human being can be. He's the prophet of God. So his life is the paradigm. And so that's why they're not going to have problems with enslaving people today. That's why they're going to use a sword to chop off their heads, because that's what they did then. That's why they're right. going to saw off hands for theft and so on. So they really are trying to make life now imitate exactly what they see about the life of Muhammad in the hadiths.
Yeah, something very wrong with that, to be that detached from today's modern world and these secularists who have, like you said, a weak spot, a soft spot in their hearts for Islam. And yet what they're doing is in many ways as bad or far worse than anything Christianity did in its worst times, going back to the Inquisition, going back to other times where fundamentalist Christianity really got out of control.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you a fair account of the history of both, you're not trying to whitewash the history of Christianity, but actually tell the truth about it.
Yeah.
That is, actually tell the truth about the Crusades, what really happened. And then it doesn't seem quite like it's presented in the popular press. It isn't like that. And take a good hard look at the actual histories and you'll see, well, even if you're a complete atheist and you had to choose between the two, which would you choose?
That is a great point. And we're speaking with Dr. Benjamin Weicker. His newest book, The Reformation 500 Years Later, 12 Things You Need to Know. It's very timely because a lot of what you see happening in society today and in the West is foretold by momentous events 500 years ago, almost to the year. And that in itself says something. I assume, Doctor, your book's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever fine books used to be sold, right?
Yeah, that's right. In those invisible bookstores.
Yeah. Right.
And also you can come to my website at BenjaminWeicker.com.
Which we will have a link to in the show notes to this interview. Hey, questions, comments, again, we implore you, send them off. We answer everything. I'm only about 35 behind right now. And it's kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feeds @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Dr. Weicker, good luck on the book. I hope you don't get too much blowback from the enemies of the West, but I'm sure you will. And keep up the fight.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.